Hello and welcome to Crime Kooks with your hosts, Rachel and
Emily, where we talk about crimes and perpetrators that we know just a little too much about. Today we are going to talk about Jack the Ripper, an infamous serial killer from the 1800s who terrorized the city of Whitechapel, London. Okay, so Jack the Ripper. So we actually do know his identity, or at least there's some very compelling evidence as to who he was. So there was some DNA evidence analyzed by an expert from the shawl of one of his victims. Her name was Catherine Eddowes, getting her mixed up with a different victim. And he was found to be linked to one Aaron Kosminski, who was actually a Polish barber, not a doctor like most had assumed. So kind of wild, really.
Honestly, imagine being like, nah, this is really precise. It's got to be a doctor. And then it's like, well, you know, actually, I cut hair for a living.
I mean, you do have to be kind of precise with your cuts if you're cutting hair.
No, actually, though, like, it's not like he wouldn't be skilled. It's just, like, he shouldn't be skilled in anatomy.
Yeah, I mean, he could have picked up a book from, like, a store, maybe, but...
Yeah, but, like, also, first tries aren't that good.
Fair. But, okay, so this was deemed by, like, a DNA expert, as I was talking about. So the man who actually uncovered this mystery of who Jack the Ripper was one Dr. Jerry Luhalainen. Oh, my God, I cannot say that. He was a senior lecturer of molecular biology at Liverpool John Moores University. Mm. So, basically, yeah, they were doing DNA evidence of... Because at the time, they had DNA evidence that they could do, but they didn't have a large enough sample. Now, in the current, you know, like in the present, we have the ability to analyze smaller samples of DNA. So that's exactly what this person did. He basically took some of the DNA that had been left on Catherine Eddowes, the Ripper's fourth victim, on her shawl, and it was matched to the known DNA profiles of the Ripper suspects. So, again, we know that Kosminski was the Ripper. Okay, so one thing about Kosminski was... When they were hunting him, the police, they did not do the best job. I feel like in a lot of the cases we talk about, the police are never really that talented or good.
Honestly, though, the police, they're never, I mean, come on. They really said, this guy has to be a doctor. And he ended up being a barber. So obviously they're, whatever those things are called where they identify the person as something, you know what I mean?
I think I know what you're getting at.
The profile they create for the person, that's what it's called. The profile they create for the killer, not correct. They also thought it was a woman, right?
Yeah, at one point they had actually suspected Jack the Ripper to be a woman, so they actually called her Jill the Ripper.
Once again, incorrect, so... You know.
So, yeah, but okay, so he was, to give police some credit, they did have him as one of their top suspects. It's just they ruled him out because of that. So, okay, so Kosminski, right? Mm-hmm. He was born September 11th of 1865 in Klaudowa, Poland, to Abram Joseph Kosminski and Golda Lubnowska. The family migrated to England in 1881 in the hopes of starting a new life. So when he grew up, because around the time that they moved there, he was in probably about his, like, late teens, early 20s. He worked as a hairdresser in Whitechapel in the east of London, where a series of murders by Jack the Ripper, literally him, who was also otherwise called Leather Apron, because that's what butchers used to wear, and they associated him as a butcher. Or the Whitechapel Butcher was another name they came up with.
Which also, why would they call him the Leather Apron, which is associated with butchers, when they've identified him as a doctor and he actually was a hairstylist? So that's adding another thing into the mix. And I understand it's because he basically butchered women, but also it's kind of sad.
But it's also, it's kind of funny. I like the name Leather Apron. It's so dumb.
It is so dumb because it's like, oh, you work with leather. That's cool. And then it's like, oh, well, no, actually I work with hair. I work with hair and, you know, scissors, but the scissors are not only on the hair.
Snip, snip.
Snip, snip, snip.
So, yeah, this guy with a man of many names, he committed all these crimes in 1888. So then later on, after he had killed, there's at least five known victims known as the Canonical Five. After he had killed those women, From 1891, Kosminski was institutionalized after he threatened a different woman with a knife. He was first held at the Colney Hatch Lunatic Asylum and then transferred to the Leavesden Asylum. So, can we just talk about the fact that it literally has Lunatic Asylum?
I know. Like, is that... Come on, guys. You can't call an asylum Lunatic Asylum. Like, I get it. Back then, it was, like, a thing where, like, being a lunatic was just, like, for shame on everyone and everything. But also, why do you want to bring that much disappointment everywhere you go?
I just think it's so redundant. It's like, it is redundant. It's an asylum. We already know there are lunatics in there.
Half of them might not have even been lunatics, because back in the day, you could have just, like, said one thing that didn't agree with someone, and they would have been like, I don't think you're right in the head.
Yeah. So, okay, yeah. So back to kind of, like, with the police, during the time of the murders, the police officials did name Kosminski as one of their suspects, though in the profile that they were doing on him, they didn't even list his first name. They just had Kosminski in the profile and described him as a Polish Jew in an insane asylum. So basically, while they were still working the murders of Jack the Ripper, this guy was literally vibing in his asylum, and they didn't even have a good enough profile to link him to the murders.
Exactly. Literally, once again, they don't profile him in... How can you have the guy literally, like, in a place, in custody, and not put two and two together? I mean, the man tried to stab a girl, and that's why he was there, and they weren't like, oh, you know, maybe this is the guy who stabbed all those other girls, too.
I just think it's so crazy that he got away with these five murders, but then he got caught for threatening a woman with a knife.
Right? Like, come on. If you're gonna be stupid, at least be smart about it.
Yes, exactly.
No, that's, like, gonna be my new motto, man. If you're gonna be stupid, be smart about it.
That's true, that's true. Yeah, we know that Aaron Kosminski was responsible for all these grisly crimes. So, to kind of talk more about those crimes, we know that he killed five confirmed female prostitutes and mutilated their bodies to a point where it was assumed that he had extensive knowledge of the human body, hence why they thought he might be a doctor, which was obviously wrong. So, his first victim went by the name of Mary Ann Nichols, who also, to her friends, was sometimes called Polly Nichols. That was her nickname. So she was murdered on the 31st of August in 1888. So, and she was found in the gateway in Bucks Row of Whitechapel. Later in the day, after she was discovered, she was identified as Mary Ann Nichols. So basically, Mary Ann Nichols, she was living in Whitechapel, and she was known as an unfortunate woman who, in the days where there was no welfare systems to help those who had, you know, fallen into these hard times, might turn to the prostitution, hence, you know, in order to eat and live and pay for lodging. So the night of her murder, Mary was, this is actually, so there's, like, actually a pretty detailed account of not only her life, but also, like, what she was wearing. So she was wearing a bonnet that none of the other residents of the lodging house had seen her with before. So this stuck out to them. This is kind of why they remembered it. So, and since she was evidently intending to resort to prostitution in order to raise the money for her housing and food, she felt this would be an irresistible draw to potential clients. So basically she was wearing this new bonnet to attract new clients at the time of her murder, which kind of is, it's good in the, kind of in the long run. I mean, obviously the police didn't figure anything out, but it's like something that stood out to the witnesses. So at least they kind of could remember that. And that might have, I don't know if it necessarily helped them catch him, but I'm sure.
It's good to help identify the body at least, because once you enter prostitution and get to the point of poverty, there's a lot of stuff that, like, they have no idea who it is, which is, like, a big issue. Even now with homeless people, they, half the time, they have no idea who the person is. They have to figure it out.
Yeah, so that's actually, like, the good thing about it too, because obviously she was so mutilated that it probably might have been hard to, like, tell who she was, so that might have helped identify her at least somewhat. But anyway, she went out in that bonnet, and basically the last time that she was seen alive was at 2:30 in the morning. So at the time, Mary was very drunk, so not very good decisions on Mary's part. So, yeah, she didn't make it very far before she met good old Jack the Ripper. Yeah, so, I mean, it sucks that she was murdered, but life back then was not very good to begin with, which is probably, again, why she was murdered in the first place, because there's no security either.
Right, especially for those in poverty.
Exactly. So her body was found at 3:45. So her throat had been cut back to the spine. So a very, very deep wound. And it had been so savagely inflicted that, according to some newspaper reports, it had almost severed her head from her body.
At this point, I wonder if they actually knew each other and that's how it started out. Is he did it so aggressively because he knew her and was angry with her? I mean, who's to say he was not done with her and she left?
Like he was one of her customers?
Yeah.
That could be it. I mean, again, so due to like kind of not great records, there's no exact connection that we can draw between Aaron Kosminski and Marianne Nichols, but that is a definite possibility. And I think that's actually kind of cool because what we see with a lot of killers is they show a lot of aggression to victims that they know.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, because for some reason, a lot of killers kill people that they know, which is strange to begin with, especially if they're people they care about. But moving on, the point is, I think they probably did know each other because that's, you know, like you said, that was really deep of a cut. And you're not going to do that to someone for a quickie, you know? Like a quick little stab? No, that takes time. You've got bone and cartilage and stuff you got to cut through.
There's actually, that's not even the only wound that was inflicted on her. So after about 45 minutes of the body being discovered, there was a quote-unquote police ambulance, which was more really a wooden handcart. So basically they used that to carry the body to the mortuary nearby. And here the Inspector Spradling of the Metropolitan Police's J Division arrived to take down a description of, at the time, the unknown victim. And he made the discovery that in addition to the slash in her throat, she also had a very deep gash running all the way along her abdomen. She had been disemboweled. So, yeah.
Interestingly enough, that also used to be a torture method they used back, like, even before then. So that could have been another thing, is he has intrigued by the previous forms of torture. And I have to wonder, do you know if he did the disemboweling, before or after he slit her throat?
See, because of the medical examiner's abilities back then, they couldn't exactly figure out what happened first.
Dang.
I'm going to assume that it was probably the disemboweling first. So it could very well have been that. Because with that amount of aggression, you'd think that Jack the Ripper is definitely a sadist.
Yeah, no, he definitely wanted to hurt someone.
So after basically they figured out her identity the next day, obviously her family came. Her estranged husband, you know, obviously was genuinely distressed. So that's kind of how they ruled him out. They kind of like knew that he obviously wasn't there at the time. And, you know, I think he was on the suspect list at one point, but they obviously ruled him out because he was genuinely horrified when he saw his wife. And so basically they had a funeral for Marianne Nichols. It took place in actually a lot of secrecy in order to deter any people who wanted to see it. You know, morbid sights attract like attention. So they wanted to keep it secret and keep people away. And it was held on the 6th of September of 1888. Okay, so basically after the first victim, 2 days later, Annie Chapman was found on September 8th. She was murdered on Hanbury Street. And this was obviously, you know, his second victim. She was also a prostitute. This is a common trend with Jack the Ripper. They all kind of ranged in ages. A lot of them were on the older side, but there was one victim who was 25 years old.
Perhaps his MO was just prostitution and nothing else.
I definitely think that that's the case, because obviously we know that they kind of ranged in that age. His next victim was Elizabeth Stride. She was found on September 30th. Mm-hmm. She had also been brutally mutilated, so again, another common theme with Jack the Ripper. His next victim, the one who was actually helped him link back to Aaron Kosminski, was Catherine Eddowes, who was also found on September 30th. They were both killed within hours of each other, and this was kind of like the furthest extent that Jack the Ripper had ever gone with his killings, mm-hmm. which is kind of what, you know, like, got the police work to kind of speed up a little bit, because they're like, oh, hey, he's killing more women. We really need to try to stop this. Obviously, they still didn't find him until way later, so, yeah. And his fifth and final victim was Mary Jane Kelly, who was found on November 9th. All five murders occurred within a mile radius of one another, within or near the Whitechapel district. And all but one of the victims was killed while soliciting customers. So, yeah.
So, thinking about this, do we know if he was an extremely religious man?
I don't. So, there's not a lot of records about Aaron Kosminski, but I don't think he was very religious. It doesn't really talk about that.
I had to ask because all of them were near the Whitechapel district, which when you think Whitechapel, you think a white chapel, you know? And that's, you know, a religious location. And if he's very religious, a lot of people who were super religious back in the day were very against prostitution and stuff of the sorts. So that could have been another reason why he was like, hey, no.
I really feel like the biggest thing was more of convenience for him, because obviously we know that Aaron Kosminski lived near Whitechapel. And we also know that prostitutes are actually they're typically targeted by serial killers. So I think a lot of what Jack the Ripper did was out of convenience. And sadly, because Aaron Kosminski is dead and the police work was not that great, we don't really know what his MO was or why he did what he did. But yeah, all we know is that we had a lot of aggression towards his victims, because each body was found with their throat slit. And at some point, half of a human kidney was sent to the police force, which is, it's a possibility that it was removed from one of his murder victims, because another thing about Jack the Ripper is he was cocky. He taunted the police, he sent them letters, he even named himself.
This feels like a Van Gogh sort of thing where he sends his ear to his lover. Only he loves the thrill, and so he sent half a kidney to the police.
That's true. So, but yeah, this guy, I like him even less now, because, like, who does that? It's so cocky. Like, literally. I mean, they still didn't catch him.
Emily, you can't tell me you are not occasionally a cocky person.
Okay, but, like, doing that, like, it's so unnecessary.
Especially because back in the day, the police really were trash, because they didn't have anything to, like, DNA test or anything like that. So, like, what were they going to do? Nothing. Nothing at all.
The only smart thing they did was save the shawl of the fourth victim, Catherine Eddowes, because
exactly.
That's what helped solve the case. But, yeah, he sent many letters from a person obviously claiming to be Jack the Ripper. I don't know why he chose that name. It's pretty catchy, I guess. Kind of strikes fear in you. Not anymore, but, you know. Because it did, actually, what he did, it caused a public uproar for the failure to find the perp, and eventually led to the Home Secretary and London Police Commissioner to resign. So, I mean, I don't know, if this probably wasn't his entire goal. I mean, obviously, you don't murder to destabilize the public and everything, but, like, you know, that was something, and I think that was, again, a part of the thrill of why he killed, because not only did it strike fear with everyone, but he also got to satisfy that urge to kill. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of suspects that the police had for Jack the Ripper. It totaled to over 100 men. So some notable people include Montague John Druitt, who was basically a assistant schoolmaster. And there's a lot of things around him. There's, like, hereditary underlying psychiatric illness and other stuff that kind of led them to think, hey, maybe this guy's kind of unstable and, you know, he might be that one. Another one was one Michael Ostrog. He was a Russian-born professional con man and thief. He was just thought to have possibly killed him because he was already a criminal. And sometimes criminals do smaller crimes and then build up to those larger crimes. So that's kind of why they suspected him.
I think everyone just blames the Russians because they're known for, they're stereotyped to be aggressive.
That's true. But yeah, obviously None of those people were Aaron Kosminski. They all came up with dead ends, or there was no proof to actually tie them to the genuine crimes, or the technology was not available to connect them to the crime. So in the end, Jack the Ripper's killing spree eventually came to an end in the fall of 1888. The truth about his crimes has been shadowed by many false claims, lack of evidence, and just the fact that it's been such a long time. So a lot of what we know today, while we do know that a lot of it is correct, there's just a lot of doubt shadowing everything, which is why we don't know for sure if Aaron Kosminski really was the Ripper, but it's very, very likely.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's also unknown exactly how many women he killed. Only the five that we talked about here today have been confirmed. With his identity known, though, or at least highly suspected, some peace can be given to the families of those victims, and a face can now be given to the notorious Whitechapel butcher who tormented East London for just 3 months, but made a much longer impression on history. So thanks so much for joining us on Crime Kooks and listening to us rant and rave about Jack the Ripper. If you want to check out some of our other great podcasts or find some of our others, visit fhntoday.com to listen in. Anyways, tune in next time to hear about the Unabomber. And again, I'm Emily.
And I'm Rachel.
Don't be stupid and stay safe.